Due to a technical issue, this recording is missing the first 3 minutes of the April 29th, 2024 UIPA board meeting. Chair Osborne had welcomed the board and public, and the minutes of the previous meeting were approved unanimously. The recording picks up shortly after Ben Hart began his executive director report.
Through Weber County received a petition. We have through Weber County received a petition. My sense is we'll probably receive another one today, the board. I just want to talk to a couple of items related to Weber County. Just as a quick note, we have been working on the Weber County project now for several months. We are not taking action on it today. There was never an intention to take action on this item today. This will be reserved for our May meeting. We have had with the Weber County Commission, I can't remember how many, but several public hearings. They've had a chance to review this item a few times on different board meetings. And I want to stress just a couple of things. First and foremost, the inland port here and what it will be doing in Weber County is not being entitled. The land use that entitles industrial development has been taken care of by the county already in years past. It is not something that we are going to be messing with. So the land use that exists already entitles industrial development. I want to make sure that that's something that's understood. We are not in and of ourselves going to be there through any type of land use mechanisms. The county has already determined that the highest and best use for that land is industrial development. Let me also say that I think what the port is looking to do there, and I think what the public can expect from us, we held the first public hearing and the first review of this project area in front of this board back in January. It's important to note that over the last 3 months now, we've developed a wetland strategy. We've had a chance to hear and listen to public stakeholders. We're meeting with Stop the Polluting Port, Dita Seed, and her group again tomorrow to hear their concerns. And so this is not being something that's being done in an isolated echo chamber. We'll say that they have influenced ultimately how we are moving this forward, and we've made some adjustments to make sure that we're maintaining the protection for the wetland and for the lake that's necessary. Let me also say, so what is the port able to do there that would not be happening otherwise? If this development moved forward under its own accord, then you would have whatever is entitled under the current zoning that is allowed for. What the port does bring is additional protections for the existing wetlands and the lake. In addition to additional protections, the Inland Port Authority also brings funding. So part of our funding stream will actually go back to help protect the wetlands and the lake. Again, we're not taking action on this item today. So if there are those members of the public who would like to have their thoughts heard on this, as the chair said, there's an opportunity through our website. Most people know how to get a hold of me. But we're happy to get more comments and adjust the plan however is needed. We're going to be flexible and make sure that we're protecting the sensitive lands that are in that area. We're going to continue to recognize them as well. I think when people do see the strategy that we're unveiling, we're not going to beat around the bush. There are a lot of wetlands in this area, and we take seriously our responsibility to make sure that those wetlands are protected. And so we're not going to hide them. It's going to be a public conversation. And then ultimately how we protect them, we want open feedback from the public, from those who are concerned, and from other stakeholders. So we'll probably have more on that conversation over the next several weeks. But let me also say that one of the items that we're keying in on right now is for clean ports. The EPA, through a federal grant program, has opened a significant amount of funding for what's called the Clean Ports Program. We've gotten a lot of questions about this from members of the public, so we want to make sure that we're bringing forward an application. Hopefully I didn't say anything too consequential there, Larry, but bringing forward an application that will bring the most money to Utah. The purpose of this money is for zero emissions equipment. So for those who have been concerned about the rail and any emissions related to the rail, our application will be asking for, we're anticipating asking for $150 million to help with this effort. I do not think we're going to get that much money. Our strategy is let's ask for as much as we can, bring as much to the state of Utah as is possible, and it has to qualify as zero emissions. So remember, this is not hybrid, this is not diesel, this is not anything else. This is true zero emissions equipment. This is something that the port believes strongly in. So we would like to, wherever we can, allow for the swapping out of dirtier equipment for cleaner emissions equipment. That's the purpose of this clean port. I want to give a huge compliment and shout out to Mona Smith. She's been running point on this over there. Thank you, Mona. She's been doing a great job interfacing with our stakeholder groups and also with EPA to understand the program. We feel like we've got a good opportunity to bring money to the state to help with swap out, again, with as much dirty equipment for true zero emissions. So it's something we're excited about. We've had a lot of questions, so I just wanted to address that. I also wanted to thank all those who were involved in our different open houses over the last several months. They've gone really well, and we want the public to be involved. So we're going to hear a little bit later from CPCS. They're talking about the statewide logistics strategy that we're doing. These open houses, our efforts to get across the state, particularly in the Northwest Quadrant, is an opportunity for the public to come in and weigh in on what the state is doing with our logistics strategy. This is critical for the port. We're not going to just work in an echo chamber. We want to be able to make sure that what we're doing actually makes the state better. So let me talk about that for just one second. I think these open houses have been emblematic of this. But when we're talking about how we make the state better, we do that, and we're aiming to do that in a couple of ways. First and foremost, when we look at the very heart of what the inland port is designed to do, it's critical that we have more exports coming from the state of Utah. That's at the heart of our mission. When we see the global disruption happening right now, we see overdependency on certain countries, particularly when those countries don't have our best interest at heart. Making sure that we are creating and producing things here in the state of Utah is absolutely vital. Production and manufacturing as an economic activity are absolutely crucial to Utah's future. We cannot just say we're going to get it from some other country. We have to be able to be at the forefront of forward-facing and formidable industries when it comes to production and manufacturing. We're absolutely going to be pushing that forward. Having a logistics system that serves that need is absolutely critical. So that's mission one. Part two is really how we build a better logistics system here in the state of Utah. Utahns are way over dependent on their cars and trucks, and I've absolutely beat the drum on this. But we have to remember, we're probably more overly dependent on the road system here in the state than any other country. Remember, we've got more trucks on the road as a percentage of our total volume than any other state in the country. We've got more cargo trucks on the road as a percentage than anybody else. So we have to make sure that we're a multimodal state. This is something that's very forward-facing. We hope we're doing this for future generations. But when it comes to 10, 20, 30 years from now, we hope we're not as road dependent as we are today. So that's part of our effort as well. We've come to love and appreciate mass transit and UTA. We really have to create better rail opportunities for cargo as well. So that's part of our mission and part of our scope. So we are going to hear from just a couple of people as part of the executive director's report as well. So first, we'll have a chance to hear from Jenna Draper, the new Utah Inland Port Authority Associate Vice President, who will be talking about VERC, and she'll give us an update on Spanish Fork. We'll then hear from Alan Evans on the Holcim groundbreaking that recently occurred. Jenna?
Thank you, Executive Director. My name is Jenna Draper. I'm the newest Associate Vice President of Regional Port Project Development. I am over the VERC Industrial Park. The VERC Industrial Park was established on July 17th, 2023. Next slide, please. Oh, he's got it. Construction has begun on a regional storm drain, a regional lift station, and roads to support development in VERC. Tax differential generated by the project will be used for debt service on funds acquired to pay for the construction of these essential utilities. Spanish Fork will also issue building permits in May of 2024, totaling over 1.5 million square feet of industrial space in the VERC Industrial Park. Energy Spot chooses VERC. Driven by a deep commitment to clean energy and sustainability, Energy Spot is dedicated to advancing the research, development, manufacturing, and distribution of integrated electric vehicle supply equipment solutions to support mobility and electric vehicle adoption. Energy Spot plans to bring 90 new high-paying jobs and invest nearly $7.3 million in VERC over the next 10 years. EQT Exeter, the real estate division of EQT, acquires, develops, leases, and manages logistics, industrial, residential, and office and life science properties. They have purchased existing buildings within VERC Industrial Park and will begin retrofitting them to accommodate their key tenants. This investment will shed a positive light on the improvements in Spanish Fork for the Inland Port. Thank you for your time today and the opportunity to share these wins with you on behalf of Spanish Fork and the VERC Industrial Park.
Okay, Madam Chair and members of the board, we had on April 19th the ribbon cutting for Holcim and their new building that was located just south of I-80 and between 5600 West and 7200 West. And Holcim was already manufacturing here in the valley, and they were largely dependent on trucks. So they were using trucks to bring in all their raw materials. They were actually, part of their operation was in Nevada, and they were shuffling between Nevada and Utah. And then also they had multiple locations here that they were shuffling around between as well. So when they underwent this project, they really had a drive to reduce their environmental footprint. And they felt like that really came through their processes and also through their new location. So this new building is a 650,000 plus square foot building that is LEED certified. It's the largest LEED certified building in the state, and they put a lot of effort into making sure that they were able to do that. The other side was around the processes, and they knew that they needed to consolidate and then also be rail served. So as they went through the process, they worked to consolidate. They're bringing part of that operation. I think all of the operation from Nevada will be moving here. And then on the rail side. So with that, we've been working on this for well over a year, and we've had great partners. We've had Holcim, obviously, Riverbend, who is the developer, Stadler Rail, Patriot Rail, and then, of course, the port. And in this process, we knew we needed to preserve a rail corridor south of I-80 headed west, and we needed, which also meant we needed to extend some track to get to this Riverbend property. And then finally, there needed to be a good operating agreement to be able to make sure that it was rail served. And so, like I said, the partners have been amazing to work with. It's been a big lift, but took a lot of different groups to be involved, but we're there and the ribbon cutting happened. And I think this is the kind of development we hope to see more of in the port.
Alan, can you say the address again for me just so I can?
It's south of I-80.
Okay.
And it's just west of Stadler between 50.
Okay.
Before you get to 7200.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. I'll just close the executive director's report by echoing what Alan was saying. I think for us, it's absolutely critical to ensure that we're doing more by rail, having an opportunity to take trucks off the road. That pressure that currently is on the Northwest Quadrant, not only in development, but also in air quality and other environmental factors, has to be addressed. We have to start to try and make a difference. And I think the rail that Alan was referring to is absolutely critical to that mission. So we're seeing really good examples now of companies that are deferring, that are taking, with the opportunity for rail, are taking trucks off the road. This is what we want to keep pushing. We're starting to see this come together the right way. So we feel like things are moving forward. I'll say this. I feel like over the last 18 months to 2 years, we've seen a really significant change at the port. And I feel like under this new model, we're really starting to see the new model and the new philosophy start to take effect. It's not up to full speed yet, but we feel like we're gaining momentum, and we're absolutely moving the right direction. And so again, as we move into how do we truly make the state better, more pollution out of the air, better job opportunities for those in the local communities, better infrastructure system, ultimately being a stronger export state here in the state of Utah, we feel like we're absolutely delivering on what the legislature has asked us to do. And we see definitely bright days ahead for the port.
I just wanted to chime in. I was also there at the Holson ribbon cutting. And the thought that I had is that this type of development, 655,000 square feet, really doing a lot to our economy. I think it's important for job creation, for logistics. But the thought that I keep having is that the inland port is actually becoming a unifier. I mean, we had Salt Lake City, we had Salt Lake County, we had representatives of the state, so many different parties coming together because of this good development. So, you know, despite what some people say that, oh, the ports may be divisive, I actually think it's unifying our state in a big way. So anyway, kudos. It was a great project.
Anything else, Ellen? Thank you. Appreciate it. Ben, anything more from you?
Nope. I think we're ready for the agenda.
Okay, perfect. Next, let's hear from Donald Ludlow with CPCS, giving us an update, as we do every month, on our logistics strategy.
Okay, great. Can you hear all of me? Can you hear me well? Okay, can everybody hear me? All right, I see Jonathan nodding, so I think we're good to go. Very good. Okay, great. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the board, I appreciate the opportunity to be here to provide an update to you on the Utah Logistics Strategy. This update differentiates from our previous one in a few important ways. We're going to go into a little bit more detail today on the modal split of how goods are moved across Utah by different modes, by rail and truck and others. We're going to talk a bit about e-commerce today. Ben mentioned it earlier in the sense that Utah households are demanding more freight, and we're going to talk about how they get that and what that means to the project areas, including the Northwest Quadrant. We'll talk a bit about the development status in the Northwest Quadrant, provide a snapshot of the project area strategies at a high level, how those are starting to come together, and then provide a little bit more detail than we have in the past on some of the strengths and also the risks that UIPA and its partners will need to address going forward. But first, let me start with a quick update and a little bit more detail on the open houses. So as Ben mentioned earlier, there were two open houses. UIPA staff, as well as the consulting team, supported these. There was one in Cedar City, and then the next day in Salt Lake City. Both of those were well attended. I think we met and surpassed the attendance expectation in both circumstances, with many members of the public, the governing elected officials, appointed officials, and most importantly, possibly for logistics, members of the business community who came and partnered and rallied and met with both staff and members of the public. So it was an excellent exchange. I know those of you who were able to make it will attest to that. I think a big benefit here was just the opportunity to have one-on-one meetings with UIPA staff who are all there representing their different geographies and disciplines, learning more about the mission and stewardship and economic benefits of UIPA, and really digging deep into some questions on current project area economic plans. I know I learned a lot and really appreciated the opportunity to be there and attend these. Just a couple more points here. There were, again, a number of project area businesses that were in attendance in both Cedar City and Salt Lake City, and I think off a fantastic opportunity to just interact and meet with members of the community and to foster a greater sense of understanding. So are there any questions from the board on the open houses?
I don't see any, Donald. Keep.
Great, thank you. I'll move right into an update on the regional, on the logistics study. So the first couple of slides, I'm going to recap a little bit, and then I'm going to go into a bit more detail, and then I'm going to talk about where we're going next. And if you do have questions, please let me know. Madam Chair, if you see any hands in the room, please indicate. I'm happy to take those. So first, this first slide, let's talk about, again, some of the major strengths that Utah has going in its favor, right? A strong multimodal infrastructure system with robust highway, rail, and air freight to support freight movement. What we've also found is that the logistics companies that provide these services in Utah really do provide the full suite, like warehousing, storage, brokerage, and finance. There are some weaknesses that we'll discuss, including there is a weakness on cold storage logistics space, and also in some circumstances, a need for greater work on the clearance issues and having customs and clearance issues, which I know UIPA has been discussing recently with World Trade Center. Utah is the freight hub of the region and supports domestic trade, including strong linkages to the Midwest and West Coasts. I showed last time that Utah's leading trading partners are, by a state basis, California and Illinois. So it's that I-80 corridor and the I-15 corridors that are predominant in terms of the way Utah is trading. Utah is centrally located and well connected to West Coast gateways and ports of entry. Noted last time also that Mexico has overtaken China as Utah's greatest international trading partner, making the ports of entry at places like El Paso and Laredo and Nogales even more important, understanding those connections and how Utah can be more integrated with the manufacturing and other work that is taking place across these USMCA supply chains. Things that we're hearing that give us reason to dig deeper and think about the risks that the state is facing logistically. Of course, growing population is an asset, but also a risk. And it risks a number of different things. One of them is just the volume of traffic on the roads, but is the way that the logistics demand is manifesting through the development of different facilities. And we'll talk about that in a moment, including e-commerce and fulfillment. We hear from many of the stakeholders about declining housing affordability, which is not something you would usually expect to hear about in a logistics study, except that it is impacting workforce availability. There's also some deficiencies in the mid-skill workforce area that are notable. There are certainly shortages and imbalances of international shipping containers that raise costs and complications for Utah exports. This is an ongoing issue. And then there is a slight declining share of freight moved by rail in Utah and nationally, and less land available for rail shared development. This is something that railroads that we have had consultations with have mentioned to us repeatedly, the possible need to set aside additional land in Utah that has rail accessibility to bank it for the future, if you will, as the lands that are being developed for logistics purposes are also often being eyed for residential purposes. So that's a little bit of the recap about those big issues that we really do need to address collectively as a state to be able to move forward and be prepared for the logistics demand that we're facing in the future. Moving in here, let's look for a moment at how the freight moves and go into a little bit more detail. Ben mentioned earlier that we are very dependent on trucking, and this is true across the United States, particularly true in Utah, but trucking handles about 84% of Utah's cargo. So that's a huge number, and this share is predicted to increase in the future. If you look at the right on the chart, you can see the overall growth curve of freight predicted for the future and the amount that will be attributed to truck and rail and multiple modes. Air is important. It doesn't show up very well in these charts. It's less than 1% of cargo. However, it is extremely critical for high value and time sensitive cargo, including things like surgical equipment that it's being manufactured in Utah and exported to Europe and other parts of the world. Railroads handle high tonnage cargo. The rail share is predicted to decline slightly. What is growing, of course, is intermodal, but intermodal is growing for both truck and rail across the board. But that is a threat, that rail share of tonnage is declining slightly. And again, the intermodal part of that is growing a little bit, so that offsets it just a bit. But that's the snapshot, both now and in the future, what's predicted. What does that mean to UIPA and the logistics strategy? There's a number of implications, but one of the big ones is how do we continue to focus on developing facilities that are well served by truck, that continue to anchor trucking, which is an important part of Utah's economy, and especially doing it in a clean and sustainable way, but also providing important land assets and accessibility for rail, so that businesses that depend on rail and that can take advantage of the pricing of rail are able to thrive. So we mentioned previously, I mentioned the e-commerce dynamic. I think this graph really illustrates this dramatic surge in e-commerce behavior in Utah. This is something where Utah households are really driving a lot of the activity, both in terms of the number of trucks and package deliveries, and then the e-commerce centers and fulfillment centers where those orders are fulfilled and shipped from. So what does this require? It requires a lot of locally based facilities to support rapid order delivery. We all want everything. We want it now, right? We want it on our front doorstep immediately. That is manifesting in the development activity and the patterns that we're seeing. This is a big part of the new warehouse and distribution center demand, and it's largely being fueled by Utah's households, by our surge in wanting to have a online retail experience instead of necessarily going to a brick and mortar store. The Northwest Quadrant is unquestionably the hub of this activity. It's the largest freight generator in the state, the largest fulfillment center anchor in the state, with a statistic we've mentioned before, about one out of every five truck trips that circulate within Utah begin or end their journey there. So what does this surging e-commerce demand mean? Well, it means that within the Northwest Quadrant, for example, and there's certainly other places in the state where there is e-commerce demand, that there is a rapid logistics-based industrial development pattern. Alan mentioned Holcim. That is not e-commerce, but this is an important part of the development of the Northwest Quadrant to be have a more diverse base. But the population and economic growth, the land availability, price, and the proximity of Salt Lake are driving this. The market is still continuing to expand in this space, even against increasing land costs. And there's a lot more that will continue to happen in the Northwest Quadrant. Only about 32% of the Northwest Quadrant is developed, and about another 54% is vacant and can be developed. The rest is undevelopable, whether it's aging landfills or wetlands or other areas that simply can't be developed. But the point of this is that there's still a lot of development that can take place within the Northwest Quadrant, and it will be critical to have a coordinated plan for future development that unlocks the full potential of that area. Outside the Northwest Quadrant across the state, we've started to look at the project area roles and how those will guide development in a tailored way in each of the project areas. Northern Utah is largely impacted by what happens with planning for the Northwest Quadrant. We envision a more integrated, dynamic Wasatch Front freight market that manifests itself through development of additional project areas like the one proposed in Weber County. We view Tooele County as a key expansion area as the Northwest Quadrant continues to develop. Virk and Golden Spike as northern and southern anchors for Wasatch Front logistics services. Central Utah has multiple roles, including supporting local businesses and a growing Wasatch Front, especially around Nephi, which will become a natural anchor for a lot of the logistics growth in the region. Iron Springs has a bit different dynamic. It's really serving a lot of logistics needs for southwestern Utah. Of course, Washington County is a growth juggernaut, but it also functions within the orbit of the greater Los Angeles metropolitan area and the dynamic and tremendous growth that's happening there. We're hearing that the rail serve sites at Iron Springs are providing an offloading and onloading ramp for materials that are being manufactured and built and or offloaded for construction and other development. And then Mineral Mountain is really an engine for local development, has a diverse portfolio. But the point here is that we're beginning to transition into a stage of this logistics strategy development where we're really focusing on the differentiated roles of project areas, each of them playing a slightly different role, but complementary across the state. So we've talked a bit about some of the strengths and weaknesses that UIPA faces, and I'm going to go into just a few slides before wrapping up. But we have mentioned that it's competitive, the stable business client, the enduring frameworks between business and government all help. On the weaknesses side, there is a significant gap in understanding UIPA's mission, programs, and vision by stakeholders, by the public, that UIPA will continue to need to work on. We have already mentioned some of the threats on the rail, both locally and nationally, losing market share. In terms of opportunities, there are significant opportunities for modes, for shippers who need multiple modes. And another one that we're continuing to hearing is how to capture the nearshoring opportunities as manufacturing returns to North America and how it interfaces with Mexico and Canada as part of that North American trade bloc. Other threats, housing affordability, and also infrastructure congestion and air quality. Quickly on the Northwest Quadrant, there's still a lot of space to develop. We mentioned that previously. The important thing will be working with Salt Lake City and others to really kind of outline the best way that this unfolds, including capturing additional opportunities in advanced manufacturing. On the challenges, we've mentioned a number of these, but one of them in particular is the mid-scale workforce challenge. There's air cargo competition from other airports and lack of truck parking and amenities. So all of those things are going to be part of what we're considering as we move forward with logistics strategy. In terms of our next steps, just wrapping up here in a moment, data analysis and consultations are complete. So we will be drilling down into these specific strategies for the Northwest Project, the Northwest Quadrant and project areas, really looking to do a few things. Improve the competitiveness of Utah supply chains through targeted infrastructure investments, attracting higher manufacturing, advanced manufacturing and industries that provide household sustaining jobs, additional partnerships and collaboration, and then working through those strategies and actions to accomplish this. A lot of this is aiming to elevate, especially in the Northwest Quadrant, higher paying advanced manufacturing jobs, kind of mentioning here that higher paying jobs do not happen without a plan and investment. So there's some very deliberate actions that need to take place there, as well as to balance with existing warehousing and distribution needs for e-commerce and the things that Utahns demand. So with that, I'll close. I'll see if there's any questions before we move on. Madam Chair.
Thanks, Donald. Appreciate it. Any comments, questions?
I just want to say great job. I think this is super useful just to the state's economic development footprint. And if possible, I'd love a copy of these slides. Thank you.
Excellent. We'll make those available to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Donald. Appreciate it. All right. Let's move on to Stephanie Pack on the 20 wells in Lamport project area. Stephanie, middle. Perfect.
Thank you so much, Chair Osborne and the members of the board. We were approached by Grantsville City, who passed a resolution to amend the 20 Wells project area. We are calling the amended zone the Broken Arrow Zone. You can see here it is west of Grantsville City, near I-80, and it's right adjacent to a rail spur that is currently servicing industry in that area. The amended zone encompasses approximately 145 acres of rail-served industrial land on the west side of Grantsville City. The amendment will take our existing 500-acre project area to a total of 645 acres of rail-served industrial in Grantsville. We will continue to focus our recruitment efforts in this project area toward light industrial, advanced manufacturing, air-cooled data centers, and optimizing it for rail users. Our initial environmental due diligence on this amended area has identified historical wetlands within the amended acreage. The data available to us through the National Wetlands Inventory is about 20 years old in this area, so we will defer to an updated wetlands delineation study that is already in progress within the amended zone. What this does do is it qualifies the 20 wells project area for our wetland policy, which sets aside at least 1% of tax differential generated in the project area to enhancing and protecting any existing wetlands within or with a nexus to the project area. We appreciate Broken Arrow for their diligence in characterizing and helping us protect these potentially sensitive areas. And we look forward to working with them and with Grantsville City on finding ways to enhance these precious environmental assets. We are thrilled about the prospect of including this development within the 20 Wells Project area. We appreciate Grantsville City's continued confidence in partnering with us as we seek to support their economic development goals for their community. We are not asking the board to take any action on this item today, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
I don't see any. Stephanie, thanks for your work. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Amy, you got 5 board policies for us in front of us, and I'll turn the time over to you. What number are you on? Okay, there you go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have 2 policies that were presented last board meeting that we'll be seeking board approval. These 2 policies have already been in operations and are just slight revisions to them. The 2 being project area and property tax differential. Since it was last presented, we did a small change to this to update the term master plan to project area plan. With that, since last presented, the personnel policy, we have not had any additional changes since it was last presented in the last board meeting as well. These other 3 policies, again, they are not new. We're just looking for this annual update. I would like to say that as we've gone to more of a steady state in a future policy amendment, we'll probably look at kind of maybe lessening the frequency that we bring these up from rather annually to every 2 years. And of course, as we've seen this happen, where there's a need, we always are able to bring these policies to the board's attention for approval. The board governance policy that has been in place since last year, we are looking just a slight update to just correct the board term limit statutory reference. No other significant changes to that one. In addition, we also have the code of conduct, which we know is really one of the most important policies we have, if not the most important, because it really sets that framework of doing the right thing. One of the things that I'll note is we've simplified this based upon best practices and moved some of those sections that really are applicable to our personnel policy to that policy, and that was presented last week by my colleague, Ben Bies. In addition to that, we've just done some enhancements on updating the references in the state statute and really combining some of the things like gifts and political activity under the respective conflicts of interest. And again, we'll be taking this to the next board meeting for approval. Lastly, we have our public infrastructure district PID policy. We've done just some small changes with changing the owner from executive director to Ben Buys, as this really is a financial related process policy. We put in some enhanced language for the approval process and the governing document, and included the governing document submission to staff, changing that from that 30 days to 10 days. That being said, that is the summary of the policies and changes. I'll pause for any questions that the board may have.
I don't see any, Amy. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Look forward to taking action on some of these later in the meeting.
Mr. Buys, looks like it's your turn. Turn your mic on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First item that I have the pleasure of addressing the board about is a proposed public infrastructure district. So similar to the one that the board approved last month for the Tooele Valley project area. This is for the VIRC project area. And a few key differences that I will get into. Just a little background again on the PIDs for those that are new or want a little refresher. We covered this in January. PIDs are allowed in Utah code. Utah LaPorte is an authorized creator of PIDs along with cities and counties. Creates a new taxing entity with approval of 100% of the landowners. For this project, because it is centered on the VIRC project area, Spanish Fork City is the applicant on this PID. They own the airport, so we plan to do the PID with the airport parcels. But much like the PID that we create in the Northwest Quadrant, all of the tax differential from the entire VIRC project area can be pledged to the PID, even though it's just a single parcel or some of the parcels in the project area. The purpose of the PID is so that we can pledge the tax differential to issue bonds for public improvements. Again, these can be a subsidiary like our Northwest Quadrant Crossroads Public Infrastructure District or independent of the Inland Port. This one, like the Tooele Valley, would be independent of the port. Board policy, Amy just talked about some small changes that we did to board policy 16 that covers these. Again, we have a two-meeting cycle. This is the first of that two-meeting cycle where we have the application from the applicant. Again, that is Spanish Fork City in this case, and a staff recommendation. The second meeting will be governing documents and final approval from the board. A little bit of detail about this public infrastructure district. Again, this is to allow for the development of the VIRC project area, about 8.5 million square feet of industrial buildings planned. We currently have about 75 million in infrastructure needs. Bonds will be used for substantial power infrastructure that's needed, regional wastewater lift stations, drain systems, other utilities, rail crossings. The proposed makeup of the board would be two from Spanish Fork, two from the Inland Port, and then one representing landowners. Again, this is a non-controlling interest. Inland Port representation would be made up of staff members. So nothing for the board on that one. And again, without the controlling interest, we keep this as an independent entity from the Inland Port. So just a note from the application from the city. They said the project will provide for the construction of essential public infrastructure to serve hundreds of acres that have excellent access to substantial transportation facilities. Without the development of this infrastructure, these transportation facilities will continue to be underutilized. So again, this is just informational. If there aren't concerns, we will proceed to governing document steps. The city has been in contact with bond counsel who will be crafting those governing documents. When they're ready, either May or most likely June board meeting, we'll bring that back for formal board approval of the public infrastructure district. Madam Chair, happy to take any questions on this item.
Thanks, Ben. I don't see any. Oh, you do? What number are you at, Victoria? 8. Very good. Thank you.
First, I think this board structure is really excellent and should be replicated anytime we have a PID. I think I'm still the only Salt Lake City representative on the PID that exists for the Northwest Quadrant. So I really like this and think it's a good template to export. What's our role as an entity when the city, because the one here is initiated by the port, what's the role when it's the municipality initiating it?
Yeah, good question. So, again, our role is this is an independent government entity. However, with us on the board, we want to be sure that the public infrastructure is developed in a way that's going to allow for the again good use of the bond proceeds to ensure that this entire area can develop appropriately. Again, it's just furthering the mission of our goals in Spanish Fork, which is to develop good quality jobs, utilize existing infrastructure that's there. So a lot of this can be done in the governing documents. We want really tight governing documents that specify exactly where these funds can be used to. Property tax differential can only be used for public infrastructure. It can't be used to subsidize developers. It can't be used to pay for developer costs. This is all public infrastructure costs. You can see the items on the slide. We're talking about public utilities. It's not things that developers would pay for, stuff the city would pay for. So again, our point, the point of us being on the board is just to watch after those funds, make sure they're going to the right place. Because there's so many different developers in the area, that makes this one a little bit unique. The Tooele Valley PID was just one developer. They're kind of controlling how that's developed. This one has many developers, really high quality, well-known developers in the area. But we want to make sure that we're providing access to the entire area for development.
Since it's only advisory, could the governing document or something, you know, going back to Ben's executive director report talking about moving towards things like zero emissions and making sure that we get to a clean port status. I know, especially in places where there's economic stress and we need to get to the place where this is generating economic stimulus for a community, I would hate if we lost the ability to push for those cleaner infrastructure things and someone else, because they controlled the money, would then be able to default to a lower caliber of infrastructure or something that doesn't conform with the clean port standard. And so would a governing document or something allow us, since it's more advisory in that capacity, are there other ways to protect the clean port status when someone else is in charge of the infrastructure?
Yeah, good question. So the infrastructure will have to be built up to city standards. I can definitely talk to the city and see if we can add some of those protections in for green infrastructure.
Okay. Thanks, Ben. I think you have a few more.
Keep rolling. Yes. Let me switch slides to Authority Infrastructure Bank Loans.
Text before you start. So all of these loans went through our loan committee board members. So if you recall, we have a separate loan committee that we call upon when these loans go through the process. So these are what he's going to present has already gone through our loan committee.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. We had a really good discussion with that loan committee a couple weeks ago. Again, it's made up of Steve Allred from the Fiscal Analyst Office, Kurt Slaw from the Treasurer's Office, Duncan Evans from the Governor's Office of Planning and Budget, Jonathan Ellis from the State Division of Finance, and Dan Royal from the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity. Thank you, Ryan, for letting us use him. So we had a really good discussion about these four loans. We have, again, it's been a while since we had an application for an AAB. We did the one for BZI down in Cedar City. That was about a year ago. So a little background. Again, this is governed by our code 1158, as well as there's a few other infrastructure banks out there. MIDA and the Point of the Mountain have infrastructure banks as well. So it's governed by 63A. We got $65 million in our infrastructure bank. Again, we gave the $10 million to BZI last year. We have $57 million available. Again, that $2 million difference between the 65 and the 57. With the 10 million outstanding, interest rates, as you know, have been really good this year, and we've been able to make a little bit of money on interest. The four applications that we have before you today represent $22.3 million of that $57 million available. As we'll talk about, two of them are very short-term, one-year loans. So we're wanting to find good ways to put this money to use while also making sure that we're furthering the best interests of the inland port. An infrastructure project includes an inland port, intermodal facilities, as well as some of the more traditional infrastructure like sewer, electricity, roads, and water systems. Statute defines that these loans shall bear an interest rate not to exceed 0.5% above the bond market interest rates available to the state. So again, even the high interest rate environments, we're talking 3 or 3.5% loans for these applicants, which is, again, in this environment, very good. The loans are administered and serviced by the Division of Finance. The board's role is to approve the loan. It'll then go to Executive Appropriations Committee. But then Division of Finance will actually sign the loan documents and service the loan. The loan committee may recommend for board approval an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Fund to a borrower for an infrastructure project undertaken by the borrower. And it may not proceed, like I said, without approval of Executive Appropriations Committee. We plan to take this pending this board's approval to the May EAC and then get those loans out quickly after that. Again, we have four loans before you. The first two are from Savage. So Savage Transload Network. Again, the first loan is the Twilla County Transload Expansion. This is a 10-year loan for $2.4 million, again at 3.04%. It's an existing facility out there in Twilla County. The expansion would allow it to double its existing capacity. Right now they're at capacity, so it's a really important project to ensure we can continue growing transload operations in the county. With our two new project areas coming online, the Twilla Valley and 20 Wells project areas, this is a really important project to ensure that we have this capacity available. The repayment source would be company funds, including new revenue from the facility. Again, this is a longstanding company, deep Utah roots, and a really good project for Twilla County. The next one for Savage is Iron County Transload. Again, this would be in our Iron Springs project area. And again, we have the BZI Transload facility. This one serves a little different purpose. This is more for the bulk and the liquid types of transload in the area. So provides a really nice hub in southern Utah for all sorts of transloading operations that you may need in that area. So again, the use of funds would be four rail to truck or truck to rail transload tracks, 100 rail car spots. Again, repayment source would be from company funds, including new revenue from the facility. As it's in the project area, we also have the collateral from the differential if it's needed to repay the loan. The third bank loan that's been requested is from Spanish Fork City. I'm going to differentiate these next two loans I'm going to present. So the first two are really what we've been directed by the board to look for, which is rail projects, especially in rural Utah. All amazing projects. We definitely love these, and we'll continue to look for ways we can spend these funds. The next two, we found really a gap in financial systems where we have some need of some short-term bridge type of loans for key players in our project areas. We want to get these projects going. We don't want to see them delayed while financing hurdles are overcome. And so we have a couple proposed projects that, again, are for 1 year or less. They are for the more traditional type of infrastructure rather than rail, but we feel like these are going to be real jumpstarts to get the projects up and running. Frankly, if they were not for a short period of time like these are, 12 months or less, I don't know there'd be a good use of the funds, but as they are really safe loans, in my opinion, and they'll be back in our infrastructure bank quickly, we think it's a good way to get this money out there and helping our project areas. So again, the first one's to Spanish Fork City. You just heard about the infrastructure district that they have requested. To go along with that, they've requested $10 million for a maximum of 1 year, again, at 3.47%. And again, this is just money that they want until they can get the public infrastructure district up and going and bonds issued to the area. So as soon as those bonds are issued, they're going to use those bond proceeds to repay this loan. Spanish Fork doesn't want this outstanding either. So again, this is hopefully just going to be for a few months. We think we can get, again, the public infrastructure district created by June. Usually bonds take about 90 days from that point. So we think by, you know, late fall or so, we should be able to get this loan repaid. They're trying to get some easements, some right-of-ways purchased in the area for the power line that we discussed. You see the $4 million for land right-of-way acquisition for roads and for this power infrastructure, $2 million for easements, and $3 million for regional sewer lift station. What we did in the Tooele Valley Public Infrastructure District governing documents is that we required the bond proceeds go to repay the loan. We would do something similar in those governing documents for the VERC Infrastructure District. Lastly, we have a loan request for Zenith Bollinger. Again, this is the Tooele Valley Public Infrastructure District and the Tooele Valley project area. Again, they were trying to get some loans from traditional banking sources. It was just being really difficult. They were having a hard time getting the money that they needed. They're also going with the bond, and they'll have this money once the bond is issued. A use of funds would be water system, pump stations, wastewater treatment system, roads, power plant. We had a meeting with the developers on Friday. They had some drone footage that is taken, showed all the work they've been doing. They've been drilling. I think they're up to down to 350 feet or something. So they've putting a lot of money and a lot of work into this project area. We just want to make sure this continues and we can get this project up and going. They have pledged all 242 acres of the project area as collateral for this loan. We also have differential from the project area. So again, one thing that the infrastructure loan committee really focused on was the ability of the applicants to repay these loans. We feel it's very good in all instances, very confident in the collateral and the repayment sources, and feel this is a good use of infrastructure bank proceeds. So, Madam Chair, we'll come back to this for action a little later in the meeting. And I will move to my last presentation if there are no questions from the committee.
Doesn't appear so, Ben. Keep rolling.
All right. I am up to the trigger resolution. So last board meeting, we did a trigger resolution, again, in VERC project area. We've got another trigger resolution. This is for Mineral Mountains project area. And this is the Minersville zone of Mineral Mountains. And it's just a single parcel that we would like to trigger at this time. The parcel has a 27,000 square foot building that was built. It's a fertilizer production facility, uses farm animal waste and turns it into pellets that are used for fertilizer. This was just finished, this building, and we would like to trigger this parcel. So again, we'll come back for agenda or for action from the board later. And that is my last item. Happy to answer any questions on this one as well.
Any questions on this one? All right, let's wrap up before public comment. Ben, Mr. Hart, just give us a update on the Salt Lake City interlocal agreement. Victoria, I'm just going to turn your mic on just so you're ready, because I know you're going to want to comment on this.
All right. This item...
Sorry, Ben.
There we go. Wrong no,
Ben.
It's all good.
Wrong Ben on.
It's all good. We can let Ben take this one. Look, the interlocal agreement that we're going to look at, this not only is last but not least, this is our most important item of the day without question. I try not to ignore any of the controversy that sometimes has been attributed to the port. And so as we look through the past history of the port, we realize the relationship between us and Salt Lake City has been absolutely critical. So much so, we realize that at times it's not always been as cohesive and coordinated as it could have been, and downtimes sometimes just unfriendly. Obviously, there was a lawsuit that was involved as well that was dismissed just last year. So we're talking very recent history. A lot of that, and I want to salute the legislature for doing diligence, working directly with Salt Lake City, changing the statute to make sure that it addressed many of their concerns. We as staff have felt like we are obviously not only going to just honor that, but we want to continue to make sure this is a collaborative relationship between us and Salt Lake City. The interlocal agreement that was adopted in October 2022 started to set the stage for how we could work more closely together. Specifically, it addressed how we can use the funds that are typically attributed to Salt Lake City, Salt Lake City's portion of the tax differential, together in ways that mutually benefit this area. Now, I feel like we've been good stewards of that. We want to make sure that it's not just the Salt Lake City portion of that funding. We want to make sure that it's every penny that comes to the Inland Port Authority from Salt Lake City ultimately is reinvested back into this, into the Northwest Quadrant and into the community in a way that will help to elevate it, not just economically, but also environmentally, and also with the community focus as well. So we want to continue and move forward towards what is a good collaborative working relationship with Salt Lake City. As we work through some of the details related to the interlocal agreement that was passed by this board and also Salt Lake City and their redevelopment agency as well, we realized there were a few things that needed to be readdressed. Not just the timing of the studies, but there was a desire to look back at the studies that we were going to be required to complete as well. All of this being done in a way to give assurance and collaboration that we are working together to spend that money as efficiently and as in the best interest of the community as we can. So the item before the board today is the interlocal agreement that we have come to terms with Salt Lake City on. It makes a few critical changes to our original study. Most notably, in the original study, it spoke to three studies, the health impact, the community impact, and the traffic impact. As we're pivoting now and within this new structure, we're looking at something different. A lot of the impact of that original interlocal agreement was ultimately tied back to the building of a port. So what was the impact of the port? Well, obviously, we're not building a port currently, and so we realize that the agreement, as it points to the impact of the port, is never going to capture what it is we're trying to do and really doesn't capture the pivot that the port has made. Now, we're always going to be looking at how we advance logistics within the Northwest Quadrant, but we're probably looking through that a little bit different lens than what we have previously. So, again, in coordination with Salt Lake City, we're going to take a little bit different approach to how we're facilitating development. The major change to this agreement, instead of the agreements that I've listed, what we're talking about now is a baseline scenario study. This is at the request of Salt Lake City. Ultimately, it tells us the baseline of what's happening in the Northwest Quadrant as it's currently being developed out. We feel like understanding the current baseline, knowing what's there, is going to give us pivotal information as we move forward and try and ultimately work together. It will lead to a preferred scenario approach. Now, within this agreement, we're going to have to build on the good work being done by Donald Ludlow and CPCS. So he will start to look at preferred scenario development within the Northwest Quadrant, and ultimately we want to be able to build on that development. We also want to build on prior work that's been done by Salt Lake City, including the Northwest Quadrant Master Plan and additional studies that may be completed by Salt Lake City. So we want to be able to take that into account. They have said they would like to update the Northwest Quadrant Master Plan, so we want to be able to understand what that means. This study allows for equal opportunity between Salt Lake City, the previously stated Northwest Quadrant Review Committee, which is also entitled and specified in this agreement, and also the port, to be able to design out a process and secure a vendor to complete these studies. The process, and I want to just hit this because I think it's absolutely critically important, the process for how we expend funds will remain relatively similar to what it was under the prior agreement, meaning that the city and the Northwest Quadrant Review Committee ultimately will have a chance to put forth objectives and recommendations for what they would like to see happen with the money, the Salt Lake City portion of the money. The port staff will also have an opportunity to put forward recommendations for funding. We feel like the first year of that in 2023 was a little bit rocky. I will say everything within 2024, we got our letter from Salt Lake City last week on what their priorities were and the Northwest Quadrant Reviews Committee's priorities were. We're ecstatic. We want to work together with both the city and with the Northwest Quadrant Review Committee on this. So we're excited to see their letter. There's some great ideas and some really good opportunities for funding. The staff has generated our letter and sent it back to Salt Lake City as well. So now over the next, Amy can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but next 30 days or so, we'll have an opportunity to work together and then bring back what we hope is a joint list for funding from both the Northwest Quadrant Review Committee and from the staff working on this. Again, just my personal opinion, I wish that, you know, we had the right level of trust between the city, the Northwest Quadrant Review Committee, and the port that we didn't have to have an agreement. But we understand that this is still necessary. And ultimately, it gives us a really good path forward to work together and be able to identify where we would like to spend this money working together. Again, we hope that this shows collaboration from the staff and the board of the port as we work together with Salt Lake City and the Northwest Quadrant Review Committee. And Madam Chair, that's our presentation.
Thanks, Ben. Victoria, I'm sure you would add some flair to this one.
So as negotiating interlocals is something that does not fall within the legislative branch at all, I'm thankful to the city administrative side that worked really hard on this, gathered stakeholder feedback, and did the tedious and necessary work to get to where we are. And I think Ben and the team at the port for staying at the table. I was in one of the meetings and it got tense to a point. I'm always fine if we fight over policy, but this is one of those issues where personality tends to be up for grabs too. And I hate that because I feel like that's a big waste of energy. I am really thankful that we seem to have a good infrastructure because I need this to work out. I went on the worst air quality day of the year to the Love's truck stop at the intersection of Highway 80 and Redwood Road. And on the worst air quality day of the year, I counted in excess of 36 truck cabs idling there. Now, those people who drive the trucks deserve to sleep in climate control and to be comfortable and to be able to do their rest in a way that is not inhumane. But on the worst air quality day of the year, how much PM2.5 is that pumping directly into the backyard of Meadowlark Elementary in Edison and all the schools that are closest there? Is that contributing to my son's deep lung cough that is unavoidable? As we keep talking about the clean infrastructure, I need it. My neighbors need it. We have no more margins. Similarly, I'm at one of the schools, Title I school, that's being closed. Our neighbors are struggling to afford housing. They're struggling to keep up with water bills that have to go up because we have to replace entire water infrastructure. We are in a state that doesn't manipulate minimum wage through policy. I need competitive jobs that come in that allow for wage competition, that improve the standard with which my neighbors, the historical blue collar workers of the state, what they can expect from the job market. So I need everything that this port is promising to come to pass and to come to pass with integrity, fidelity, transparency, accountability. And so Interlocal feels like this is now a pathway for us to accomplish those things, for us to course correct when we get off because it's a new thing that we're doing and we know we're going to have to course correct, but also to work in a way. It will always be a pang of jealousy and frustration when I see other people opting into their own PIDs and asking us to come and participate, that history cannot be changed. But going forward, I'm hopeful that this interlocal, that the structures that allow for larger community input and my community in particular to give feedback are going to pave a path so that we can accomplish these goals safely, transparently, with accountability, and in a way that's going to leave it a little better than we found it.
Thanks, Victoria. I appreciate it. I'll just add some discretion of the chair to talk about the relationship with Salt Lake City. The mayor called me the other day just to catch up on a number of things, and the port came up, and she actually got choked up. She was so thrilled with where the relationship was and how far we've come over the course of the last 5 years. And that's a testament to the staff. It's a testament to you being a part of this board and seeing that we actually are not the evil stepchild that's trying to take over everything, that we do have common interests and we do have common goals. And we're at a great spot. We're at a great spot with negotiations with rail. We're at a great spot with, what the future can hold out there, the wetlands policy for sure. And it's absolutely a new day with the relationship with the port and the city. And we need that. We need that to work. We need that to happen. It's important to the West Side community in the city to make sure that we all have their best interests in heart as we grow and develop and continue to make plans for this area. So, if anything, when we all walk away, we should be really proud of the fact that battle wounds are healed and that we're on a different path and that we're working well together. So, Victoria, thanks for your work. Ben, staff, thanks for your work. Amy, I know you're right in the middle of this interlocal agreement, so appreciate all the work that you've done there. All right, let's move on to public comment. I have five letters here. I'm going to read the first two names if you can come up and be in witness one and witness three. Again, 2 minutes for each public speaker. So we're going to start with Ken Cross, and then we'll move on to Alan Murphy, if you'll both come up and introduce yourselves, and then we'll get started. Anytime you're ready,
thank
Mr.
you.
Krause.
Good morning. My name is Ken Krause. I'm a Salt Lake City resident for nearly 50 years. I would like to start with a quote by Western writer Wallace Stegner. "We are the most dangerous species of life on the planet, and every other species, even the Earth itself, has cause to fear our power to exterminate. But we're the only species which, when it chooses to do so, will go to great effort to save what we might otherwise destroy." I found this relevant quote in a new book by the renowned Utah rancher Heidi Redd, and it reminded me of UWEPA's plans for Weber County. I visited Weber's wetlands and waterfowl management areas a couple of weeks ago, and all I can say is wow. Nearly 9,000 acres begging to be inundated by hundreds of warehouses, rail spurs, roads, water, power, diesel trucks and trains, stuff we call progress. Some friends of mine just sent a letter to the Weber County Commission. I worked on an early draft, and here is how it ended. "What if we just left this land alone? The Weber Port will not and cannot be a shining star among county achievements, but rather a profit-driven impediment to public health and to the well-being of our built and unbuilt environments." Without having to spell it out, but we will, what on earth are we doing to our planet? Gentlemen, ladies, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Alan Murphy, time is yours.
Morning. My name's Alan Murphy, and I'm part of the development team at Broken Arrow. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak to each of you as members of the board in urging you to approve the amendment to the Twin Wells Project area to include the Broken Arrow project that was shown up on the screen a few minutes ago. Broken Arrow is a general contractor that has worked in Tooele County for just over 50 years. So in that position, we've been able to see firsthand the boom in residential construction that's going on. We'll continue to go on for the foreseeable future. Unfortunately, the majority of the people who build in and move to Tooele Valley continue to commute to Salt Lake City or other Wasatch Front cities for their employment every day. So there is definitely a dearth of available employment opportunities in Tooele County, specifically Tooele Valley. We anticipate the construction of approximately 2 million square feet of manufacturing and warehousing space over the course of the next 10 years, approximately. Each will be rail served and truck served. And so we view our location, which is 2 to 3 miles south of I-80, as ideal for this kind of development and this kind of opportunity to bring jobs to our local communities. Lastly, I would like to publicly thank you for your consideration in this regard, but also to say thank Stephanie Pack for the help that she's provided to us. When we first began this project, we knew almost nothing of the UIPA's mission or expertise or resources. And with her help, we've been able to avail ourselves of a lot of opportunities that we didn't even know existed. So we'd like to issue that. Thank you to her. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Next two up are Rhonda and Dita. If you'll both come up and address the board. Lana, Rhonda, I'm going to let you pronounce your last name, but it law written, risen?
Lawrenson.
Lawrenson, okay. Lawrenson. Thank you.
I'll start with that. I'm Rhonda Anderson Lawrenson. I'm a resident of Hooper and a small business owner. I grew up in Hooper, and we are raising our family here because it's one of the best small towns in America. We have chickens, honeybees, and a garden. I'm requesting a pause on the Weber County project, which was sprung on us. There must be time for answers. 6 months of the year, I walk in Hooper's Ogden Bay waterfowl management area, and I get my fix for birds, frogs, coyotes, and turtles. At night, you would be astonished by the dark skies. But I only go in for half of the year because all of the entrances are closed to all foot traffic. I emphasize, this is such a sensitive area that you're not allowed to even walk in there. This is right next door to where the port is proposed. So huge trucks and bright parking lot lights would be okay where you cannot walk. The proposed port at 9,000 acres is roughly half the size of the entire waterfowl area. That would have a mammoth impact. I'm heartsick. The other day at the wetlands 12th Street entrance, I photographed half a dozen pheasants right in the middle of where the port is proposed. At the other end of the planned port, a huge spring lake was teeming with birds. Taxpayers are currently spending millions to manage these wetlands. Good principles dictate that certain areas of the community be optimized for certain purposes. The waterfowl areas have already been budgeted as wetlands. Industrial development right next door would undo all of that protection and funding. The only reason I haven't made a bigger stink yet is that I only just learned about it. My neighbors haven't heard a peep. It feels like this is being rushed before people can object. Taxpayers and residents have a right and a duty to demand answers. What are we getting for what we're giving up? As a business owner, I would never fund a project without studying the business plan. Our state prides itself on fiscal accountability, and the inland port in Weber County has not yet met that standard. Am I wrong? Then prove it. As a public project, this is subject to transparency, ample notice, and accountability. Residents and municipalities like Hooper must understand the economic, social, and environmental impact. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Ms. Seed.
Hi, I'm Dita Seed with the Center for Biological Diversity. I'm here on behalf of over 1,500 concerned community members, along with partner organizations, Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, Great Salt Lake Audubon, Great Salt Lake Interfaith Action Coalition, the League of Women Voters of Utah, Youth Coalition for Great Salt Lake River Riding, and the Stop the Polluting Ports Coalition, to deliver a petition, which I will give to Larry in a minute, in opposition to the creation of the Weber County Inland Port Project Area, which is going to create havoc to these wetlands that are in between the Harold Crane Waterfowl Management Area and the Ogden Bay Waterfowl Management Area. Significant public harm will be caused by paving over, destroying, and impairing thousands of acres of Great Salt Lake's biological wetlands. And to add insult to injury, taxpayer dollars will be used to subsidize this destruction, Wetlands help reduce water and air pollution and are vital to a healthy ecosystem. They support millions of migratory birds from over 300 species. Fast-tracked industrial development that the Port Authority proposes will destroy wetlands and the surrounding environment, creating a cascading series of environmental harm, water pollution, water depletion, and habitat loss. So we're really calling for you to push pause on the Weber County proposal. As you heard Rhonda say, the community does not know very much about what's being proposed, and it's frankly terrifying. And then I just want to add, we're seeing an example of how this moves forward with what's happening in Tooele. So here you have Zenith Bollinger saying they have a hard time getting money from a regular traditional bank, coming to you for a low interest loan for a project that is so poorly spelled out, a quarter of a mile from Great Salt Lake. The people in Tooele County don't really know what's planned. And has there been any real analysis of the impact of that development on 12,000 acres of biological wetlands in Tooele? So you're rushing ahead with Tooele, and we're looking at you about to rush ahead with what's in Weber County. And I'm telling you, it's a recipe for disaster.
Thanks, Missy. Next up is Sarah Buck.
Hi, I'm Sarah Buck. I'm a resident of Salt Lake City. I want to bring up the concept of good faith. It's part of contractual agreements. When you entered into the contract with Salt Lake City, you entered into an agreement that included, as you stated, a health impact study, an environmental impact study, and a traffic study. Those were supposed to be completed in 2023. You are now coming to us and telling us that instead you're doing a baseline study. What in the world is a baseline study? It doesn't even come close to what you agreed to. And while it may be true that you're not building a transloading facility in Salt Lake City, I would suggest to you that you have already affected air quality, health impacts. I find it insulting to have this replace what you agreed to in a contract. And I think anybody who's paying attention would agree that this is not what we signed up for. I think there's a reason you're avoiding those studies. And I think you know as well as I do what that reason is, because they're not going to come out looking great. Because we all know that all those warehouses, everything coming from them has to be transported somewhere. How? Good faith would look like requiring these studies at all of your locations. Because if you are operating in good faith, you don't want people getting sick because of what you're doing. Good faith would be requiring these businesses to get loans from banks that actually look at their business plans and decide that they're viable or not viable, instead of taking taxpayer money and giving low interest loans and then sitting here and telling us that no taxpayer money goes to developers. It's going to developers through these banks.
Thanks, Ms. Buck.
Thank you.
Just a quick clarification. So Ms. Buck stated that it was the port that was pulling the plug on those three studies. It was not. We actually had feedback last summer from Salt Lake City and were ready to push out. When I met with the Northwest Quadrant Review Committee, including Ms. Seed, Dita was very vocal that she wanted to switch this over to the baseline study. So in answer to Ms. Buck's question, who and what are these studies, that would be decided by the Northwest Quadrant Review Committee. We're working together on this. I don't want the perception to be that the port walked away from those studies. It's not. We absolutely were willing to push those studies out and had an RFP that had already been approved by Salt Lake City ready to go. So I just want to make sure that that's clear.
All right, board members, let's go back and let's talk about some approvals on the board project areas, property tax differential policy, and the personnel policy that Amy presented earlier. So we're looking at, in your packets, BP 4 and BP 11. The other three are on their first cycle of board review, so we'll take them up next time we meet. But is Jonathan still on, or is he? Okay, perfect. We have a quorum. So we're going to go to any discussion on BP4 or BP11. And if there are none, I will take a motion and a second, please. Jeff.
Happy to do that. I'll make a motion that we approve BP4, project area and property tax differential.
I'll second that.
All right, we're just going to go to a voice vote. So all those in favor?
Aye.
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 And then BP11, gentlemen.
I move approval of BP11.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Voice vote on both on BP11, the personnel. Aye.
Aye. Aye. I know, it's a little weird.
All right, the four loans that Mr. Baez talked about earlier, the Savage Tooele, Savage Cedar City, the Spanish Fork, and the Zenith Bollinger. Again, those last two are very short-term loans, and we still have a quite healthy balance inside the infrastructure bank. Any discussion from any board members on those four loans? Do you want us to do these individually or? Okay. Very good. So let's look at the Savage Tooele one first that's in your packet. Okay, perfect. So the proposed, do you want me to read that? Do you want Ben to read that?
I can do that.
Yep.
The first proposed motion is to approve an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Authority Revolving Loan Fund of $2.4 million to Savage Transloan Network, with the terms of the loan being 10 years at 3.04% interest rate, payable in 10 annual payments.
Discussion to that.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Ryan.
Second.
Perfect. Voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right. Next one, Ben.
Next one is proposed motion to approve an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Authority Revolving Loan Fund of $5 million to Savage Transloan Network, with terms of the loan being 10 years at 3.04% interest rate, payable in 10 annual payments.
Any discussion to that? Seeing none.
I'll make that motion.
Thanks, Jeff.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Keep going, Ben.
The next proposed motion is to approve an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Authority Revolving Loan Fund of $10 million to Spanish Fork City, with the terms of the loan being 1 year at 3.47% interest rate, payable in 1 year.
Any discussion to that?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And finally, the final motion would be to approve an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Authority Revolving Loan Fund of $4.875 million to Zenith Bollinger, with terms of that loan being 1 year at 3.47% interest rate, payable in 1 year.
Any discussion to that?
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. Let's move on to the adoption of the resolution 24-05, the trigger resolution for Mineral Mountain Project Area. Larry, can you read that resolution into the record, please?
Absolutely. This is trigger resolution for Mineral Mountains Project Area, resolution number 2024-05.
All right, we'll take discussion to that resolution. I'll just mention that we talked about this last time, but the 50 new jobs in Beaver County with this project, it's a huge amount of workforce needs for Beaver, some county as small as Beaver County. So incredible things that are going on there. I'll take a motion in a second, gentlemen.
Before I make the motion, I'll just say that I had the chance to visit this area recently, just 2 weeks ago, and it's a really big deal for Beaver County, and I'm really supportive of this.
I'll take that as your motion.
And with that, I move approval.
I'll second it.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Madam Chair, is it also worth mentioning on that? We recognize Beaver County Mineral Mountains has been a huge collaboration. Ryan's team is actually leading out on this. So we want to give a huge thank you to all that OEO is doing because it is a collaborative effort. But we're seeing great things happen down under their leadership. So thank you.
That's great. Thank you. All right. And then the final adoption of the resolution 24-06, the amendment to the Salt Lake City Interlocal Agreement. Larry, will you read that? No, Ben, will you read that into the resolution into record?
Yes, resolution number 2024-06, Interlocal Cooperation Agreement Amendment between Salt Lake City Corporation, Redevelopment Agency of Salt Lake City, and the Utah Inland Port Authority.
Any comments on this? Okay, I'll take a motion in a second.
I'll make that motion.
This is going to be a big shocker, but I'll second it.
Ooh. Okay, all those in favor, please say yes.
Aye.
Yes,
yes.
Aye.
Thank you. All right. The chair will now entertain a motion to move to a closed session to be held right now at 10:36 a.m. in room 445 in the Utah State Capitol, 350 South State Street, and via electronic meeting for the purposes of a strategy session to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property, as allowed and described in section 52-4-204 and 205, the Utah State Code under the Open and Public Meetings Act. Do I have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second. Larry, will you do a roll call vote on that one? That's in my notes, so that's what I'm going with.
I'll come borrow this microphone. Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Aye.
Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Jonathan Friedman.
Aye. And hi.
Great. Thank you. The board will adjourn the meeting and we will include the start and end time of the closed session for our published minutes. Thank you. We will move to a closed session.